Few countries are as important to America's vital national interests as is Turkey. It is that rare Muslim majority country that is also a democracy and an economic powerhouse. In fact, while economies around it have crumbled during the last few years, Turkey has racked up year after year of strong economic growth. Soner Çaptay, my guest today, is the director of the Turkish Research Program at the Institute of Near East Policy and an expert in U.S.-Turkish relations. His recent report, called The New Turkey and U.S. Policy, is perfectly timed as President Obama begins his second term with a brand new national security team. My conversation with Dr. Çaptay. Mr. Çaptay, since coming to power, the Islamist AKP has turned around a lot of statute which had to do with separation of religion, government, education, and so on. I couldn't tell from your report whether you were being critical of this development or whether you were simply making an observation. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
I'm neither making a critical observation nor a critical remark. I think this is more of saying Turkey has changed. The old Turkey is gone. A new country has emerged. But in some ways, it is falling in between what Ataturk's Turkey was and what Erdogan wanted to make it into, primarily because this country has such a strong Western overlay, meaning strong ties to Western institutions such as NATO, European institutions, the European Union, the international financial market, as well as Western values such as constitutionally mandated secularism, that the new Turkey, entirely reshaped and remolded by the governing Justice and Development Party in the 10 years, the last 10 years, is a bit of AKP's Turkey, but still a bit of Ataturk's Turkey. So I think it's a mix of the old and the new.
Much of Turkey is still a very conservative, not exactly rural, but more non-urban. The direction in which the AKP seems to be going, is it more in line with what people in Turkey generally believe?
I think what has emerged in the last 10 years, the new Turkey, is, and there are many accounts of, you know, what has changed and what has become. We can all agree that this is now, for all practical purposes, a middle-class society. It used to be a society which had a middle class up until two decades ago, but now it's predominantly a middle-class society. So I would say that the main characteristic is that it's wealthier, and I think this is what helps the AKP win elections. They have won three consecutive elections, largely because they have delivered phenomenal economic growth while the rest of the world around Turkey has melted down. Southern European economies had an economic problem, and the Arab world countries went through political upheavals, and Turkey has done very well in terms of its economic growth. At the same time, I think this is a country in which the AKP, being rooted in an Islamist opposition, has kind of installed its own values in the Turkish society because it has ruled for 10 years. What does that mean in the Turkish context that a party has ruled for 10 years? It means a lot of years. Why? Turkey is a country which was typically run by coalition governments that would typically run or remain in power for about 2 to 3 years. So very few governments ever lasted their full 4 to 5 year term. The AKP has done that three times. So in terms of the dog years of Turkish politics, it's like the AKP having been in charge not just 10 years, but multiplied by the two or three that this party has been in charge for three consecutive terms, unforeseen in Turkish politics, and has been able to finish all of its three terms unforeseen in Turkish politics. It will be the equivalent of a party being in charge in the United States for four consecutive terms at least. That is the kind of impact that the party has been able to bring forward as a result of that longevity.
Why is NATO becoming increasingly controversial in Turkey?
Actually, most Turks are embracing the idea of NATO deployment of Patriot missiles in Turkey. This is because NATO has a very good name recognition in Turkey and good reputation. After all, NATO protected the Turks against Soviet communism, but really, as the Turks see it, against Russia. Russia is the Turks' historic enemy. The Russians and the Ottomans fought 19 wars. The Russians started all of them. The Ottomans lost all of them. So the Turks really fear the Russians historically, and they know that NATO is what protected Turkey from Russian domination during the Cold War. As a result of that, most Turks, even the diehard Islamist Turks, like NATO because NATO has protected Turkey against, as they see it, godless communism. The protests you see right now against the deployment of missiles are by minor ultra-nationalist groups. I would say across the board, there's widespread support for NATO deployment in Turkey. I would even go one step further and say that it would be almost hard to imagine that NATO will be deploying missiles and personnel to another Muslim-majority country, and you would see kind of no debate in the public realm. People would be accepting that idea with open arms, and that's the case in Turkey. So I think it shows Turkey's uniqueness. As a Muslim-majority country with a strong Western overlay, such as a deep attachment to NATO, that for every Turk now, NATO is coming forward as a delivery agency for security, especially given that the Syria war next door threatens to spill over into Turkey.
Do you agree that that Turkey is just as important to NATO as NATO is to Turkey?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is a mutual necessity-based relationship. Not only Turkey needs NATO, but also NATO needs Turkey. First of all, because Turkey is the only large, powerful Muslim-majority military in NATO. Having NATO, Turkey in NATO makes the alliance not one that looks like it's entirely European or based on majority Christian nations, but that has a broad membership. At the same time, NATO needs Turkey also for more tangible things,
right,
such as operations in Afghanistan, for which Turkey is a crucial partner. It has led NATO missions in Afghanistan a few times, and it's also a very important logistics base. And I think the alliance, if it ever gets involved in Syria, is also going to find out that with Turkey, things get done very easily in the Middle East. In other words, Turkey's location makes it an ideal partner for NATO alliance, because after all, this country borders Iran, Iraq, Russia, and Syria. And there's no other country in the region that has this kind of a positioning in terms of NATO's logistic and strategic interest in the region.
There are some voices in Washington that are lately saying that if Turkey were to veto a NATO exercise because Israel was invited to join it, that the United States should stay out of that exercise also.
Actually, those differences over Turkish veto of Israeli participation in NATO were recently lifted, and I think that took some backroom diplomacy by the U.S. diplomats, as a result of which Turkey lifted its objections, and I think the Israelis have also released the transfer of some sensitive technology to Turkey for selling Turkey some aircraft. I think that within the background of a diplomatic warfare, Turkish-Israeli ties are actually kind of benefiting from booming economic ties, unexpected as it is, and at the same time, what I would call budding military ties. The two countries are realizing that although their political leadership doesn't get along, they have a shared interest in Syria, and they also have shared interests in the region, that the instability of the Arab Spring has led both of them to come closer to the United States in search of security. So I would say that the Turkish-Israeli relationship is a nuanced one. In the public realm, it looks weaker than it was 10 years ago.
Mm.
But in the economic realm, trade is increasing by about 30% a year. This is since the flotilla incident in 2010. So economic ties are better than they ever were. And on the military realm, I think that we are going to see some necessity-based cooperation as Syria descends further into civil war.
You've been listening to a conversation with Mr. Sonar Chaptai on behalf of the Atlantic Council, Sarwar Kashmiri. Thank you for listening.